I'd like you to take a look at the pictures that are in front of you. We're going to do a little survey. So if you would, just raise your hand when I call out the number. But I want you to look at the pictures and tell me, who is the most rebellious? Is it number one? Is it number two? Number three? Number four? Nobody, huh? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? I'm getting no votes. Ah, I got one vote. Number nine? Number ten? Oh, okay. Oh, there we go. Okay. Number 11? And number 12? I think 10 won. All right. Who works hard? Is it number one? Is it number two? Is it number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Oh, okay, seven. Number eight? Okay, some there. Number nine? Number ten? I think 8-1 on that one. Who doesn't care what others think? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? Number nine? Or number 10? Okay, 10 won that one. Four came close. Who's the most practical? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Okay. Number four? Number five? Number six? Okay. Number seven? Number eight? Number nine? Number ten? Oh, that was all over the place. There wasn't a very good consensus on that one. Who's the most studious? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? Number nine? And number 10? I think 8 won that one. Hmm? Oh, they all go up to 12. Oops, that's right. Sorry about that. Who's the most fun-loving? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? Number nine? Number 10? And 11 and 12. Okay, who's most interested in girls? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Number four? Four won. Number five? I guess we can go through it. Four obviously won. All right. Now then. This one I have 10. Who's the most rebellious of the women? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? Nine and ten? I think. Oh, yeah, ten. Okay. Who works hard? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? Number nine? And number 10, between 3 and 5. Who's the sassiest? Number 1. Number 2. Number 3. Number 4. Number 5. Number 6. Number 7. Number 8. Number 9. Or number 10? Between 6 and 10. All right. Who's the wealthiest? Is it number 1? Number 2? Number three, number four, number five, number six, number seven, number eight, number nine, number 10, I think 3 won. Who's the most practical? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? Number nine? Number 10? There's eight and then five. All right. Who's most interested in boys? Is it number one? Number two? Number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? Number nine? Or number 10? Oh, 10 definitely won that one. Now then, I have a question for you. What is it about these people whom you've never met cause you to make judgments about their character and their background? See, everyone had a decision about something about their character, something about their background, and you made a decision. You didn't meet any of these people. In other words, our clothing reflects our thoughts. A while back, there was a man named Andy Rooney. He was a commentator on a news show called 60 Minutes. He berated his fellow newsmen because the men were appearing without ties, back in the days when people typically wore ties. And he pointed out that their casual dress was inappropriate for what they were doing because it said they didn't take the news that they were delivering seriously. You know, marketers know that most kids start building brand loyalties at an age of 10. And by 15, those loyalties are basically fixed. So they develop images designed to attract customers. They offer music, articles, news, all geared to a particular characteristic. And that includes clothing manufacturers. Another little tidbit is Warren Berkeley, who preaches down in Texas. He spoke of a man he knew named Luther. He was a member of the church where I was working, a good and generous Christian who died of cancer. Luther was one of those men who said exactly what he thought. One Sunday evening after services, several people came to Luther's home for refreshments, and among the group was a teenage boy who had a very strange haircut, unlike anything you have ever seen. And Luther said to the boy, "Adrian, why do you have your hair fixed that way?" The young man immediately answered, "Mr. White, I'm expressing myself." Luther said, "Why don't you just tell people that you're stupid?" Many people become offended when people make decisions based on what they're wearing. It doesn't matter what outfit I put on, because I'm still the same person inside. Well, when a person is forced to wear a uniform, well, that's true. The clothing doesn't tell you much about the person, and definitely not about the person's character. But when a person has a choice, when there's a freedom of choice of what you're going to put on, the things they select do announce to everyone things about their what's on their mind. Take a look at Matthew chapter 15. In Matthew chapter 15, starting at verse 16, Jesus said, "Are you still lacking in understanding also? Do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth passes through the stomach and is eliminated? But the things that proceed out of the mouth, from the heart, and those defile the man. For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and slanders. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hand does not defile the man." Outward actions are a reflection of inward thoughts. People who commit crimes, who commit sins, have been thinking about them before they actually acted on them. It comes out. It comes out also in the things that they say. You know, in that parable that we had read for us of the wedding feast in Matthew chapter 22, the king was angered when one person showed up without wedding clothes. Why was he angry? See, the man came to a wedding feast of a king or a king's son, but he wasn't dressed for a wedding. What did he state by his choice of clothing? He stated he didn't care. And when the king asked what was going on, the man had no answer. He knew what he was doing. He knew he made a choice. He couldn't respond to the king because the evidence against him was clear. It's right on his body. Even in the Old Testament, if you look all the way back to Genesis 41, Joseph was in prison for several years. He is called into the king's presence from the prison. But I want you to notice what Joseph did. In Genesis 41, verse 14, then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Notice that. In a rush to get to the king, he takes the time to shave and change clothes. Why? Because he wants to make a good impression on the king. He wants to get out of jail. See that on courts all the time. Somebody's getting in trouble. So those people show up in nice clothes, well-dressed, well-groomed. Why? Because they don't want to go to jail. They want to make a statement by what they choose to wear. Now, some people might argue and say, well, that's not what I intended. It's amazing how many people either don't understand the simple concept or purposely ignore it. I found this wonderful article by Elizabeth Schuett. She's a high school educator. Here's what she said. Sally's standing in front of my desk, tugging on her painted-on miniskirt, the one that's smaller than my favorite dish towel, and complaining, Arthur is sexually harassing me. I hate that when it happens. Occasionally, I regret encouraging 14-year-olds to read. Too many seem to think Grandma's grocery store tabloid is the Midwest equivalent of the Wall Street Journal. But I'm obliged to investigate. What has Arthur done? He looked at my legs. I try not to sputter or roll my eyes. Objectivity is my job. He said my skirt is too short. So I encourage her to get on to the harassment part. She says, that's it. We have a dress code where I teach, and most of our kids come to school looking just fine. Of course, there's a couple of guys who have bought into what someone has told them is the gang look. They come to school dressed like derelicts with their outsized pants dragging the floor. Kind of makes you wonder if their mothers watched them going out the door looking like that, or if the kids are changing clothes in the alley, stashing their Levi's in a handy hedge. They want to wear their ball caps turned around backwards because they think it makes them look really bad. And continually test and protest the school's rules of no hats in the building. Sally's skirt is too short. And it is too tight. I ask her if it's comfortable. Oh, sure, it's great. Then why are you constantly tugging at it? Are you ready for the answer? Because that's what they do in the movies. Guys like it. Being an educator is an education. Then maybe Arthur is doing exactly what you wanted him to do, I suggested. You know what she says? She says it wasn't Arthur's attention that she was trying to attract. I explained to her that virtual nudity is not selective. And if she's going to go around with her backside hanging out, she'll learn to deal with the unprogrammed responses. She says, I ought to do something about Arthur. I asked her what would she like to suggest. Paint his eyeballs black and buy him a guide dog? Sally's not too happy with my lack of sympathy and informs me rather shortly that her mother encourages her to express her individuality. I suggest her search for singularity is going to land her in the pneumonia ward. Sally demands to know what I'm going to do about Arthur. I tell her nothing. I ask what she's going to do about her skirt. She says she's going to tell her mother on me. Sure, why not? I'm thinking, briefly, the question crosses my mind, is this what I went to college for? So I can explain to someone's out-to-lunch mother why her daughter, the one with her fanny fanning the breeze, has no harassment case? If there's a victim here, it's Arthur. He's got hormones too, you know. The problem, as I see it, is the simple fact that I'm not Sally's parent. I'm her teacher. It's my responsibility to see to it that Sally can read and write and enjoy literature. I am professionally bound to introduce Sally to 3.5 paragraph essays and descriptive writing, compare, contrast, write a letter to the editor. That's what I do. And I feel twice blessed if I can help her enjoy it along the way. However, it is not my job to have to explain to a grown woman why her teenage daughter should not come to school wearing clothes that would be more appropriate on a street hooker. I'd like to her to know the injustice that she's doing to her daughter by not allowing such absurd behavior, but encouraging it. And then, when the outcome doesn't meet expectations, blaming it all on Arthur. I like to accuse her of depriving her daughter of a childhood and causing a 14-year-old to make grown-up decisions. But most of all, I guess I'm curious to know why she's willing to sit back and let someone else raise her child. What's wrong here? Sally was set out to lure a particular guy, and she's upset that someone else took the bait. And notice that because it wasn't her intention to draw Arthur's attention, it is therefore Arthur's fault for being attentive. But tell me, should a 14-year-old girl be seeking someone else's sexual attention? And yes, sexual, because that was the bait she chose to use. She knew it because she said Arthur was looking at her was sexual harassment. So she knew. Take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. And we're going to look at verse 9 and 10. Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women, making a claim to godliness. I read out of the New American Standard, but I'm using the New King James words up on the board. But modest, comiso, refers to things that are orderly, showing good behavior, and respectable. Propriety, eidos, refers to having a sense of shame, bashfulness, or reverence. Moderation, sophrosyne, refers to sobriety, having good sense, having a soundness of mind, and a display of self-restraint. Now tell me, though you didn't see Sally's outfit, did she demonstrate any of those principles? You know, if you go back to those pictures that we had of the ladies, which of these most match those ideas? And which of them least matches those ideas? And when you look at the men's clothing, are there any problems with their clothing Does it express the idea of someone who is trying to live a godly life? Oh, I had one other passage. I wanted, in Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2, and in verse 11. For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all men, instructing us to deny ungodliness and worldly desires, and to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in this present age. God teaches us to deny worldly lusts. And yet many state by their clothing choices that they're pursuing them. We may consider ourselves independent, but we have to admit that clothing choices are heavily influenced by those around us. I'm teaching at a high school right now. They have a very strict uniform code. So everybody basically dresses alike. You know how many other kids have the same haircut? It's amazing. They have to wear the same clothing, so they express it by their haircuts. And you think, why is that one particular style so popular? Because the world around us influences us. It's always going to be there. But I want you to consider, what's influencing your choices? Are you being influenced by the world? See, in Romans chapter 12, Romans 12 and in verse 2, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. In fact, James warns us in James chapter 4, James chapter 4 and in verse 4, you adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility towards God? And whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of the God, of God. And Peter tells us in 1 Peter chapter 4 and in verse 1. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourself also with the same purpose, because he who suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of time in the flesh no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. For the time already past is sufficient for you to carry out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and then malign you. The world expects everybody to follow along. The push is there. People who are different are teased. Yet the world's going in the wrong direction. Are you influenced by your conscience? Because there's a problem there. Your conscience is trainable. In fact, there's a warning to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 2. By means of hypocrisy of liars, seared in their own conscience, as with a branding iron. We can get numb to things. We're so used to seeing things around us that we just accept it for that's what it is. You know, Israel got to the point in their sins, it no longer bothered them. In fact, Jeremiah says in Jeremiah chapter 6, Jeremiah 6 and verse 15. Were they ashamed because of the abomination they had done? They were not even ashamed at all. They did not even know how to blush. Therefore they shall fall with those who fall at the time that I punish them. They shall be cast down, says the Lord. They were so numb to it, it didn't embarrass them in any way. See, the world's a dark place. And in Ephesians chapter 4, Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 17, "So this I say and affirm together with the Lord, that you walk no longer as the Gentiles also walk, in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart." There's that problem. They've gotten calloused. "And they, having become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. But you did not learn Christ in this way." Are we being influenced by our peers? Now, Paul says it's not wise to compare yourself with others. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, and in verse 12, "Therefore let him who thinks he's..." Oops. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 12. "For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding." People make mistakes. Just because something is popular doesn't make it right. There's an interesting law in Exodus chapter 23. Exodus 23 and in verse 2. "You shall not follow the masses in doing evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after a multitude in order to pervert justice." Don't let the majority influence you. That's a command. In fact, that's one of the reasons why Peter fell, and Paul had to scold him. In Galatians chapter 2 and in verse 11, "But when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision." The rest of the Jews joined him in hypocrisy. And with the result, even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. Just because someone came and they didn't want to be different, they started to do what was wrong. And Peter had no one else to blame but himself. Or do we let our influence come from God? See, God taught us everything we need to know. In 2 Peter chapter 1 and in verse 3, "Seeing that his divine power has granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness through the true knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and excellence." It is from God that comes wisdom. As Proverbs points out in Proverbs chapter 1 and in verse 7, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." We show our wisdom by what we do. And in James chapter 3 and in verse 13, "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom." Be honest with yourself. What statement are you making by your clothes, by your behavior, the things you choose to do? Because that's something other people read. And we want to be an influence for good, not evil. I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God, would like the prayers of your brethren on behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.